All the folks who only came to the session because you were wondering why it was called You Sound Marvelous. So this is 80s-ish, 90s-ish, I think 90s, maybe late 80s. I think I was in college. Billy Crystal, Saturday Night Live, for folks who maybe are too young or outside of the country to get the context. But this was his character, and his big tagline was, "You look marvelous." So for this session, we call it You Sound Marvelous. I know all of us have had a great experience on Link where you get the rich wideband or HD audio. And I know all of us have also had a really poor call experience on Link. So our objective here is to give you the tools and kind of the approach to make every single call that your users have on Link, you know, a marvelous rich call. By the way, just one little bit. I was looking at the news. Whoops, still playing here. Before we popped in here, and there's an announcement from AT&T that they're going to begin to support HD voice on their cellular network. So Link and, of course, Skype have had, you know, wideband audio, the capability to, instead of the 4 octaves you get narrowband, the 8 octaves you get in a wideband codec. We've had that capability ever since we released in the RT audio codec. So the rest of the world, the cellular world, is kind of catching up to it. But you guys, all using Link, now have the capability to offer that to your users. So that's our premise of our session. I'm Andrew Schneiderman. I work in the Link product team. We have a customer engineering team that's focused on talking to customers and learning from customers and having you help us understand what we need to do to make the product better, to enable you to deploy it more easily, to consume it better, et cetera. So love talking to customers. Love that you guys took time. We understand that we're all that's standing between you and the attendee party. So we'll do our best to keep you entertained. And up here, I'll let Kent.
Hello, everyone. My name is Kent Tilger, and I'm a Premier Field Engineer, or PFE, based in Las Colinas, which is about 4 hours north of here, right next to Dallas. So I'm very happy to be here. Thanks.
So Kent is one of a group of, you know, field engineers we have that work directly with you guys. And Kent really helped build this thing, as we learned with some of our early customers. And Kent's going to go deep with you about midway through the session and drop in the NetMon and look at how you can actually see on the wire and diagnose some of the areas where we're seeing problems. So with that, what are we trying to get out of this session? So we have three things. We have the art of CQM and the science of CQM. So in that context, I'm the scientist. Kent is the artist. The idea is that I'm going to spend, I don't know, the first 20 minutes or so going through the model that we built. It's all based on data that's in the Link QE database and how we extract that data to give you a view of your network and a view of your users so that you can pinpoint where call quality problems are coming from. The art part of it is what we do for you is we show you where there are problems, but we don't tell you how to fix the problems. So, for example, if I can tell you that there's a problem between this mediation server and this gateway, there's potentially a whole bunch of network infrastructure between those two components. And the components themselves may not be healthy. It may not be a network issue. So Kent, this is where Kent comes in, and here's where the art comes in, that you need to partner with your telephony team, partner with your network teams. And for all I know, some of you guys may be all three of those teams all in one sitting there, and you need to figure out where in your particular deployment the problems lie. So that's the art part of it. And then the last bit of it is, the last 10 or 20 minutes of the session, I want to demo for you something we've built called the CQM scorecard. So we've been working on CQM for probably the better part of a year, and we talked about it at Link Conference, at our conference in February. And one thing that's begun to realize, is that it's kind of complex. We're pulling a whole bunch of data out of SQL, and it's sometimes not intuitive to figure out how to use it. So we've pulled all the data into Excel, and we've rendered a whole bunch of views so that it makes it directly actionable and directly useful for you to kind of customize the targets you want to hit and get that view based on your data and your implementation. Now, unfortunately, I can't tell you that it's out there yet. We had hoped to release it so that at this conference we could say, okay, go out and get it. We kind of got stuck in release process, and it's going through all these things that I've never had to deal with, like globalization and support for Unicode characters, and it does collect your data, so we have privacy. So a whole bunch of hoops we have to jump through, but it will be published this month. And I think there's a way for me to find all your email addresses if you registered with them, and I'll send everybody a note when we're done so you can pull it down. It'll be published as part of the network guide, which is where all this stuff is. So those are the three areas we're going to talk to. So I'm going to hit this first part, the science. Ken's going to do the art, and I'll come back and we'll do the scorecard. So voice quality. We went to our support guys, and we actually got some data based on this. Over a third of every support case that's raised through Premier, you call the phone and say something's not working with Link, I'll have a voice quality issue related to it. So there's one data point. Microsoft experienced some significant quality problems a year to 18 months ago in our implementation. And now as we work with customers, and more customers are going really, really big on Link. And as you grow, and as you disperse the number of users and it crosses your network, the complexity of the deployment, the number of moving parts, quality tends to suffer and drop off pretty quickly. So we see a need to proactively have this framework to do quality to kind of fill those gaps. That's the feedback we've gotten from you guys and from our own deployment. So what I have up here, don't bother trying to read it. Sorry, it's a little small on the slide. Actually, it looks decent. This is the scorecard that I'll show at the end. Basically, this is a customer that we've been working with about the last 6 months. And when we started working with them, it was all red. Red is bad, yellow is decent, green is good. So they've gone from all red in these different call legs that I've called out here, and that you can see at the bottom the devices, to being yellow to green on most of these areas. So this is the approach that we want you to take. You do a baseline, and then you can work using the scorecard to iterate against it and kind of stomp out problems as you go. And then the other point we'll re-emphasize is it's not a one-time activity. So at Microsoft, we went through this process. We got to a level of quality that we are happy with. Really low levels of loss, user surveys coming back good, high MOS scores. And then we kind of said, okay, we're done. Then it started to tail off again. Firmware updates for gateways, router configurations change, new sites come online. It's really a process where you've got to kind of constantly be looking at it, figuring out where problems rise up again. Is configuration drifting on your routers or your gateways? And really operationalize this. Every one of you will do that in a different way, but this is more than just a one-time activity. So that's what CQM is. By the way, it's a big room, I know it's late. If there's questions, pop up to a mic or just yell them at me, because I want to make sure you guys are still with us and we don't put anybody to sleep. So why is call quality tough? So on this slide, I've put all the Link components that handle media, usually terminating media, in some cases with the edge, they relay media. But it's all the components that relay originates from or passes through. Now you take all those components and you lay it over your network, and I've only got one of each, but there can be multiple pools, multiple mediation servers, multiple gateways, and then you've got all the network devices on your network, and all of a sudden you build this pretty complicated web. And if there's a problem in any one of these yellow arrows, so each yellow arrow indicates a call leg, or what we call in CQM a stream, a voice stream. If there's a problem in any one of those, it results in a problem for the whole call. So for example, I've got my audio video MCU in the middle. I've got a couple of internal attendees at the top. Maybe I've got an external guy at the bottom. Maybe I've got somebody calling in from PSTN through a mediation server on the far right. What's CAA and CAS? Those are actually system components that Link has, conferencing announcement service and the conferencing auto attendant. When you call into a conference, it answers. It's an IVR. Those also contribute media. So if any one of those legs, say it's the guy calling in from PSTN, it has poor quality, it brings the quality of the whole call down. So we've built this kind of complex dependency structure that we've got to be able to pull apart and look at each individual to see where the quality problems lie. So that's why this is a tricky bit. The Link 2013 networking guide is hyperlinked on this slide. We published it in January. No, we published it in October. In January, we updated it with Appendix C, which is CQM. Appendix D, which Kent wrote, which has some troubleshooting approaches for some of the poor stream examples. And we updated it again, I think, in Feb, and we'll update it again after this conference with the new scorecard as well as some updates. There's a new document aspect of it. So all this stuff is documented in the network guide, but CQM is meant to give you an actionable way to use all the content in the network guide. By the way, who's read it? All right, 10, 20 people. Appreciate it. All right, so there's a bunch of stuff in the product today that helps you out here. We've got SCUM, we've got our management pack, we have a bunch of reports that come out of monitoring server. They can be call quality reports, they can be adoption or usage reports. Those go against a couple different databases we have, and of course we have our field and support teams. So this doesn't replace any of these tools, but most of these approaches are based on, you know, the exec in your company has a poor experience, and he calls and yells at you, or he calls the help desk, and the help desk yells at you, and you want to troubleshoot a particular issue. So these are very helpful for that. What CQM is, it's proactive, before that guy's got a poor experience, and it's looking at all components end to end. So these are two complementary sets of tools. So what is CQM? So fortunately, CQM split out into 10 discrete areas. We kind of fudged a little bit. One area's got like an A component and a B component. But we figured 10 was a nice round number. So it's kind of like the 10 commandments of CQM. And we split those 10 areas into three buckets or three dimensions. The first is server plant, which is the core of your link implementation, those AV servers, the mediation servers, gateways. The second area is endpoints, all the factors that might impact me placing a call from my software, from my link client on this PC, the PC itself, the audio device, the way I connect to that first hop on my network, the way I connect to that server component like an AVMCU. And then last mile. And last mile is exactly that. It's the wired subnet or the wireless subnet that the device connects to the infrastructure. The first area we look at from a server counter perspective, we have a set of KHIs that I'll talk about next. The other areas are all pulling data, all harvesting data out of the QE database. So one thing I've got on this slide, let's see. Oh, wrong mouse. Just want to click on. Sorry. I don't know if this will actually work. Never tried this on the podium machine. Oh, look at that. So we published this thing a couple months ago, and this is each of those 10 areas is one segment of this road. It's a poster. At Link Conference, we gave out a bunch of them. I didn't bring any this time, but this ZoomIt view is nice because you can go in and out of it. But it shows you each area that you're looking at. So for example, if I zoom into here, so this is one of the components of server plant. So this is specifically looking at the leg from an AVMCU to a mediation server. And there's three icons here, a circle, a square, and a triangle. So the first thing we do in CQM is we figure out what's the right target for packet loss for streams in that call leg. We baseline and we set that target. The next step is we achieve it. So we figure out, and here's where Kent can help us show us how do we figure out, is there a switch or a queue that's overflow? Where are we dropping packets? What do we need to remediate on the network? And then this last step is we need to maintain that. So the guy that I worked with on our documentation team actually turned this into a game. So if you get the poster, you print it out, there's a set of playing cards. And the idea is that there's three players, the link admin, the network admin, and the telephony admin, and you get a bunch of Jolt Cola and Hot Pockets, and you can go through all these different troubleshooting scenarios and play it as a game. So, lost my clacker. So the first thing we look at is our servers. So we have a tendency to blame everything but ourselves, and we need to look internally first. So we need to look at the servers, make sure the servers aren't stressed, the servers aren't misbehaving, the servers don't have poor NICs, that the servers themselves aren't the cause of loss or the cause of poor quality. So what I'll do here real quick is I'll switch over to me. You see that? Yep. And this is a spreadsheet that we ship with a network guide that lists 80 performance counters that we went back through all the component teams to aggregate. Who's got a guess for how many counters are in the Link product? Anybody? 300. 300, 500. It's just shy of 8,000. I don't know, 7,800 something. We actually counted them at one point. And the problem is, as we write the software, every developer instruments his component, and you know, so we ship all these, and it becomes really hard for you as the customer to figure out which are important. In the SCOM management pack, we do a good job of breaking them out, but the Scrum Management Pack is broad and in some cases can be very chatty. So we wanted to whittle it down to just the core set. So that's what's in the spreadsheet. So if I look at this example tab, and Kent has some better examples here, and he'll go into this in more detail. But basically, the way this guy's structured is there's a set of core compute resources, memory, CPU, disk, that's on this first tab. And you can see in this example, this customer's got some issues. This first row is core, is processor. So they're getting close to limits on the range of these counters on certain cores. Little constrained on memory. These ones here are NIC, right? So in the maximum, they're actually dropping a whole bunch of packets. And then these down here are disk. So you can see where your servers may be in trouble, and then you can drill into these specific areas that are component level. And you can see, for example, if I have disk latency, that's probably going to result in stored procedure latency on SQL. And that's going to result in like long time to join a conference, stuff like that, long time to update presence. So that's the first thing we look at are the look at the server and look at the KGIs. Oh, by the way, and I think Kent's got a better slide that blows up on this. We also put a visual together for this. So you can see at a, I see people squinting. I think this is the slide that Kent has, so I'll look at a different one. So there's a set of counters, the base set of counters, and then a set of workload-specific counters, like, for example, in SQL. So those are KGIs. So for the rest of them, that's one area. That's the server area. The other nine areas are all based on QE. So let me just give a little brief background on QE. So every single link endpoint, every single link agent, whether it's our conferencing service that answers the phone, whether it's me placing a call from here, whether it's a link phone edition phone, whether it's our AVMCU, even Edge, they all, at the conclusion of a session, put a little XML blob together and send it to the QE database. So if you could read this slide, which I guess you can't, sorry, there's not a way to zoom on that podium PC, but you'd see that those two red areas are jitter and loss. So we've just called out a particular set of areas. So when I hang up the phone on a session, and you can see this if you want in your client, just look at the UCAP iLogs and look for VQ report. That's the XML bit that has all the stuff in it. But we're going to drop that as a record in the database. So now we accumulate this vast amount of information because these endpoints are all over your network. And we know if they're wired, and we know if they're wireless, and we know if they're VPN, and we know if they're on a particular role. So we can pull all that data apart. And that's effectively what we use to give you these views in CQM. Couple of quick points on QE. So you may have Link 2010, you may have Link 2013, you may be going from one to the other. The schemas between those two databases are different. We did a bunch of work in 2013 to make looking at networks easier. We extended the ways we classify poor calls. We added the capability to classify a video call or an app sharing call as well. We added some views. So fundamentally, the schemas are different. These hyperlinks linked to the schema of those two databases. But CQM can only look at one database at a time. So if I'm on 2010, Kent is on 2013, we have a call. When I hang up, my record is going to go to the 2010 server, QE server. Kent's record is going to go to the 2013 server. So I'm not going to have a complete view. So CQM is most effective if you're not in this prolonged state of coexistence. And you just have a single QE database instance. So if you're on 2010 or 2013, and you do have multiple QE databases, consider moving to one. It's typically not a scale issue. It's not a network issue. It's just these small text-based records that get flown around. It's not user impacting. So bottom line is get a single instance. It also helps just in the standard reporting out of the box. We don't have no way to aggregate data across those instances. Does that make sense? Okay, so here's a network. On the far right, we've got a place where users sit. Maybe it's a branch, maybe it's a central site. We may have a mediation server there. We likely have a gateway there. And of course, there'll be subnets with users and all kinds of different user devices. Moving towards the left, in the bigger box in the middle, we have our data center. And there we have our link pools. And we may have multiple of these, but we'll have our link pools. We'll probably also have some set of mediation servers, and we may or may not have gateways there, depending on how your topology is. And then as we move further to the left, we'll have our perimeter network with our edge servers in it. And then all the way out, we'll have the folks who are working from home, working at a convention, working from Starbucks. All those folks can come in through edge. So we want to cover that entire real estate of that network, right? So these yellow blobs indicate one query that we've written and that's in that network guide. So this one, for example, is plant one. And this pulls out of that QE database all the sessions between an AVMCU and a mediation server. So you can see we're now starting to provide coverage for parts of that network. Second thing we do is exact same query. We're just looking at different server types. Now we're going from mediation to gateway. Now, again, we're covering additional legs of the network. The green on the diagram shows all the network that we have visibility in. The last thing we do is we look at that last mile leg. So all the wired and wireless subnets across your enterprise that has anybody with a link client that's connected. So we can see how those calls went. So effectively now we have complete coverage of your internal network, everywhere a link client would traverse, and your external network. The one area that's a little bit of a black box is edge, because we don't terminate media in edge, we just relay it. So we do have a tool to help you look at that, which is pre-call diagnostics. Who uses pre-call diagnostics, are familiar with it? Okay, so we shipped a new version of it. We originally, I think it was R2 maybe we released it. So we just recently revved it, so it's got two versions, a modern version for the Windows 8 kind of experience and a regular version. And it's a user-side tool, but it's really helpful. It's kind of similar to the Test My Call Quality, but kind of from a geeky view. So it'll show you jitter, it'll show you loss. I think it shows MOS. I think those are the three things it shows. And that uses Edge to relay packets off of to do that test. So that can give you some visibility if you have problems in your Edge environment. Okay. So we can see the whole network, right? So now what are we doing? What's the criteria that we're doing to surface where there's problems in the network? So this table shows you the five values that are in classified poor call. So if you look at the out-of-the-box reports from the monitoring server, you'll see classified poor call, and you'll see if your users are having problems. These are the five things: degradation average, round trip, packet loss rate, jitter in arrival, and ratio concealed samples, plus the value, they're ORs, right? So if any one of these is off, we're going to tick that flag. The problem is, if you go to your network team and you say, hey, I have these problem calls, they may not know what degradation average is. Heck, I don't know what degradation average is. Now I can read it, so now I know. But some of these things like jitter, packet loss, everybody knows what those are about. So when we wrote CQM, we decided to do this very straightforward, very simple. And this is the approach we did at Microsoft with our internal IT. We just look at loss. So if you're dropping packets, we know there's a problem. So this green box is by default what CQM uses as a criteria to flag a stream as poor. And you'll notice for classified poor call, it's 10%. That's really high. You should never have 10% loss on your corporate network. You should never have less than 1% or 2% loss in your data center. So we're missing a lot if we go by that value. So we're looking at 1% loss or a peak of 5%. Now, every customer's network's different. Every customer's environment's different. So we've given you flexibility. By default, this is what we'll do, and we found it works well. But if you would prefer to do it by classified poor call, there's a flag in that PowerShell script that'll use that mechanism. Or if on your particular network, round trip time, for some reason, is the most interesting thing to you, you can customize it. And you can just say, I want anything with round trip time over 100 milliseconds. So this is just reinforcing that point. This is actually from a report that comes out of RAS, which is, what does it stand for? And what does RAP stand for? Risk assessment. Okay. So in the field, we have a really nice set of proactive programs that you can look at the health of your environment. Historically, they've been called RAP. Now they're RAS, which is a service side of it. So this report comes out of the Link RAS, which is a CQM report. And so it shows you visually that, see on the bottom, That's classified port call. And then the red on the top, the larger curve, is what CQM would show you. So it's the same pattern, but we're intentionally amplifying the problem spots in your network. So we're very intentionally going, okay, check with your users, but we think you probably have a problem in this area. And if you do, this is where you need to focus. Okay, so let me peel apart these 10 areas to give you a little bit more detail on them. So there's three of these slides with bullets, these kind of bullseye charts. There's four in server plant, there's four in endpoint, and two in last mile. And they're bullets intentionally because you want to start in the middle and work your way out in priority order. So when that customer I showed at the beginning, we showed them a scorecard of all red. Where do you start? Right? So we want to give you guidance on what's the most important things to start with. So for example, here, the very first important thing, ring zero, or the server health one, is make sure your servers are doing okay. So check the KHIs. And then after that, look at AVMCU to mediation to gateway, and then gateway out. So, and you can see on the right, I've got a smaller set of those link components for each of these. So these are the streams that I'm focusing on in this set. So then let's look at those in a little more detail. So server health, that's a little icon of that KHI poster. Basically, you're going to collect a set of KHIs, and Kent's going to walk through that and show you how that looks for a particular server. After you've done that and your servers are looking good, then you move to the we call server-to-server stream. So it's a link server to a link server. Should be on your managed, either in your data center or in your core network. So we expect those to have really high quality. So we use a really low threshold of 2%. If over 2% of those streams that go across those servers is more than 2%, we're going to make it yellow, we're going to make it red. And again, we're just looking at a loss rate of 1% or a peak of 5%. Those are the two things we key off of. And then from there, you can look at the server pairs and figure out on your network where the network path is. I mean, you can do very simple things like a trace route from one to the other and then figure out what elements may be causing the packet loss. And then this last one is gateway to PSTN. This one's a problem for us. So on the far side leg of the gateway, we don't know what's going on. Now, if it's a traditional PRI, T1E1, you got to work with a gateway manufacturer or the provider for that to figure out if there's a set of health statistics you should be looking at for that. If it's a SIP trunk, Sonos, I believe, has now shipped a version of their firmware that will actually collect IP stats from that leg and put in the QE database, just like all of our other servers will do. So if it's a SIP trunk and it's IP, then maybe there's something you can do there. So that's server plant. What about endpoints? What happens here is equally important. So we're going to look at the device. Is it a USB device? Is it the integrated laptop and speaker? We're going to look at MOS scores. We're going to figure out if that's a problem for you. From there, we're going to look at the system. We had one customer that had a driver, I think it was a storage driver, that was hogging the CPU because the interrupt level was incorrect. So it can be really esoteric things like that. Another typical culprits are AV scanning or really active video type processes that pull out a CPU. If the machine is stressed, it'll inject glitch, and the machine itself can be the source of poor quality. So that system, media path is VPN. VPN's a no-no for media. We're already encoding the media. If you do it a second time, we just know that's a poor experience. So we try to eliminate VPN. We'll flag it for you. The other poor media path is if you're instead. So if I call Kent, ideally the call flow is directly between the two of us. If we're in this room together, probably on the same subnet. But if for some reason we're blocked from talking to each other, by default, Link will route that call through the edge. And that can become a really long path on the network and a really inefficient path. So we call out calls that are using that internal edge interface to relay. And then finally, transport. We always prefer media to be on UDP. In some cases, we can't negotiate UDP. We'll fall back to TCP. Doesn't work as well. We call that out as well. Question? Yeah, so the question is, for remote users, it's a little bit of a different scenario. You're going through Edge. It's a really good point. If I'm connecting from this conference and you're the Link admin, do you have any control over the conference center's network or the conference center's Wi-Fi? So that's what we categorize as unmanaged. We don't have a way to ensure that user has a good experience. So we call those out in here, but other than telling your users, hey, if you're at a conference with 10,000 of your best buddies and you try to do a link call on the Wi-Fi, probably not going to be so good, right? So that's this concept of what's managed and under your control versus what's unmanaged. By the way, love the questions. It's all recorded. So yell it at me and I'll repeat it, or if you want to go up to the mic. Did I get it, though? Is that what you? Okay, cool. Correct. Correct. So if you require VPN to access some particular apps inside your company, split tunnel. So make sure. Right. Really good point. So you know, educate your users on that. Figure out ways that you can have your VPN solution have the media outside the VPN tunnel. Approaches like that. Question was, what about VPN? Yeah, another question. So I can point you to an article on it. There's no straight answer because every VPN solution is different. At Microsoft, we use the local firewall client, and we have some special configuration that says if media traffic is coming from link.exe, do it outside the tunnel. But there's a bunch of different ways to address it. The question was, how do I do implement split tunnel? I'm bad at repeating the questions. Do you guys mind trying on the mic, especially that you guys are real close? Yeah.
I have a conference going on with 20 people, and they are experiencing poor quality. And all this CQE methodology that you mentioned is well and good. It might be some time consuming. Is there anything like in SC SCOM or something that can pinpoint the problem right away and help immediately in the middle of the conference?
Yeah, there's a bunch of stuff in the product at the time of the call. So there's stuff we call user-facing diagnostics, and even a visual in the client that shows, we call it burnt toast, when the signal, kind of like your cell phone signal, turns red. That indicates, and you hover over it, and it gives you some actions you can take. If you're go off mic and there's multiple audio devices in the room and it's causing echo, we'll detect those conditions and we'll surface them to you. If after the conference is over, and you have the conference ID and you have the user's SIP names, you can go into the standard box reports and see what went wrong. So there's a whole bunch of ways to react to that. SCOM will throw an alert if you know something goes down. So there's a bunch of different points to that. The point with CQM is if a bunch of that stuff's happening, you'll just be running around fighting fires all the time and you'll never put them out. So that's why this is a...
My question was mainly like if there is a very important conference going on with CEO or CIO hosting it, and they want us to take immediate action before the conference is over, right in the middle of it, to see if we can fix it. Is there anything that can be done?
Why don't you come up and chat with us after?
Okay.
Was there another question? Yeah. A web proxy? So the question is, what about a web proxy? So we're a SIP product for the most part, so connections won't go through a web proxy. The Link web app client, the mobile apps, use HTTP as their transport, so they will go through web client. So you can tell by the client type and how they're connecting if a proxy is involved. Yeah. Yeah, I know it's a tough discussion with security. So there is some documentation that we can point to, and actually there's a whole section in the network guide. So take a look at that. All we care about is the media traffic. Signaling can go over the VPN. The media is as encrypted as it gets, right? It's AES, you can pull out all the crypto standards. It's encrypted from the client, it's encrypted from the server. So that's, I think, the way to have that conversation. All we're doing is media outside the tunnel. So I'm gonna move on, just in interest of time. But if there's questions that we don't get to, I love the questions, we'll stick around after as well. Okay, so right, back to the endpoints. So the first thing we're gonna do is we're gonna look at every device that your user are using, and we use this average send listen MOS, which basically is a payload measurement that looks at the quality of the voice in the payload, so before it's even hit the network. So is the device actually causing poor quality on the rendering side, on the encode side, right? Second one is the system, and here we look at a glitch factor that's in the QE database to measure how much glitch the actual system that's doing the encoding is putting in the call, right? And then for media path, VPN's a no-no, and the internal relay. Those are the two things we key off of. Calls are internal, but still relaying. And then the last one is simple. We count up how many calls are using TCP versus UDP.
One more quick question.
Yeah.
It seems like the media reports or the diagnostic reports you get don't really rely on the intel if you're on the internet. So
yeah, great question. Great question. So the question is, the reports don't reliably tell if you're on VPN. So, and Kent can correct me if I get this wrong, but we key off of an operating system value that is up to the VPN manufacturer to decide if they want to toggle or not. And if that's toggled in the system, we'll log it in the QE database. A lot of times, we'll go back to customers and say, here's the list of subnets that are really poor. And let's say, oh, that's my VPN subnet. So if you're not seeing VPN flagged and you know you're using VPN, we actually have a variant of the query that you can put your VPN subnets in, and it'll come back and count how many sessions are on those subnets. The other thing you can do, and I'll show you when we look at the scorecard, is if you just know the subnets on the VPN, you can just look at those and you can see how many sessions are on them. So that's why we're limited showing you VPN or not.
Also, we show the internal call instead of the external call.
That is correct. We will designate if a call is internal versus external going through Edge. But if it's VPN, it'll always show as internal,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
So that doesn't help you.
But you know if the guy's outside and he's using the VPN?
No, because a VPN call will think is internal.
I know, but I'm saying if you know the guy's outside.
Gotcha. Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. So the very last two areas, maybe the most important as we look at across customers, this is the one that's hardest to manage, particularly if you're new to VoIP, because you have this broad network and it's maybe not optimized for real-time audio video, is wired and wireless. And we separate them because it's really hard to do good on wireless. We know it's really hard to do good. And some customers even say, I'm not going to say I manage wireless. I'm not going to guarantee my users a good experience on wireless. So you can make the decision. But we do make the thresholds different. So we're looking at streams from a user, and this is internal, to a link component or a peer-to-peer call, either wired or wireless endpoints. And this is how we look at it. It's the same qualifications for a poor stream, it's just loss. But we've upped the target, so by default we look at a 5% measure for wired and a 10% measure for wireless. And you can change those thresholds for yourself. But basically, by default, if you're over 5% poor on a wired subnet, we're gonna say there's a problem and you need to look at those subnets. So there's a bunch of stuff you can do, quads, maybe there's insufficient capacity, CAC might be part of the solution. Wireless is tougher. We have a wireless white paper. We have wireless qualification programs. We have vendors that actually consume our API to show you problems in your wireless network. There's a bunch of interesting work going on right there. There is ways for wireless to do quality of service. I think it's called WMM. So, but this is a much bigger problem space traditionally. Okay, so we're going to transition over to Kent here to dig down into looking at a couple of these areas in detail.
Thank you, Andrew. So I'm very curious to get an idea, how many people in this audience are strictly from the networking side or responsible for the networking side of the environment, okay? Okay, just a handful. Okay, so what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna go through two brief examples, and this is what Andrew showed as Server Plant 0 and Server Plant 1. Server Plant 0 is where we validate the server health. We, as he said, it's really the target. We want to make sure that everything in the server environment is healthy before we can even look at the network side. So,
oops, sorry.
That's right. So this is just an overview of how I think of this process. And as Andrew said, it's really something that you won't just run one time. You will pretty much have to operationalize these processes in the environment. So the first thing that we look at, we're going to baseline the environment, and then we're going to assert health at the server level. And I think of this as a preemptive approach, because essentially we force an outcome here, right? We assert a certain metric that we want to achieve, and then we achieve that metric, okay? The next piece of this is that once we've achieved that, it's just a process that we have to repeat. So we will continually come back to this and make sure there's no configuration drift or any changes in the environment. But this is just kind of an overview of the process itself.
The hardest one is the maintain, so the last triangle. So in our internal deployment, we actually invested in some tools to manage configuration drift on our catalyst switches or whatever our core infrastructure gear is. So we basically define the goal configuration when you define your real-time queues, and we have a process that goes out and inventories those and compares it against that goal configuration, reports on drift, and has a way to correct it. So ideally, you want to get yourself in that state where it's healthy, and then you want to repeat, maintain.
Yeah. Okay, so this first example is the server plant zero, and I'm just going to give you a high-level overview of what we look at here. So the first thing, really first things first, the foundation of the environment. We're looking at architecture, design, and ultimately capacity planning. You know, this has to be in place in order for us to support large scale potentially. So as Andrew was saying, we sometimes will see this quality drift as we start to add new users. So it's a critical foundational piece. This next aspect is the what I call platform system. And essentially what we're looking at here is recommendations from the vendor, right? That the server model, we want to look at the recommendation for BIOS, firmware, and drivers, and just make sure that we have up to date, we have every server up to date. And again, this is something that you will want to redo potentially quarterly, depending upon how often you want to verify that these that everything is up to date, because the vendors do a good job of keeping, of creating new updates, so they're very beneficial for us to implement those in the environment. The next aspect is software and configuration. So software piece of this is like the operating system, what level of service pack do you have, what level of patching do you have, link server, cumulative updates, et cetera. We want to keep that up to date. And then the second aspect of the configuration is, for example, we want to validate network configuration. Examples here are RSS or receive side scaling, offloading potentially, static routes. And really it's just a QA process to validate that everything is in place as it should be.
I'll give you one example on this one. We worked with a customer. It was actually a technology customer, so this is a little bit embarrassing for them. And they were seeing a lot of poor streams between their AVMCU servers and their mediation servers. Couldn't figure out why. They said they're in the same rack. They're right next to each other. There's no way there's a problem there. When we looked at the KHIs, specifically for the NIC, it was just ridiculous. I mean, the number of packets that were being dropped was huge. Turned out it was a driver update that they needed to apply. Fixed it all, but to make it, for some reason, they had to actually rebuild servers. Because they didn't get this right the first time. So make sure, it seems simple, right? But make sure you go through the due diligence there. Link is very sensitive to any network issues on the server.
Yeah, and another example would be potentially that you have the ability for an internal client or server to access the external edge. That's going to definitely create a problem. So it's that type of validation that we're doing at this stage. Okay. Then the next step here is once we have all of this foundational components in place, we can then look at the KHIs. But we don't really want to look at KHIs prior to validating the environment because, I mean, you could do that, but it's kind of a backwards way to approach it. So once everything is in place from the platform, we then look at these KHIs, and as Andrew said, there's 80 counters that we look at here. On the left side is an example of some of the components and link that we look at. here's an example of the front end KHIs. The thing to look at here is that we have these across every server role, and the counters that are in yellow are the system components, are the purple. Application components of Link. Then in the purple on the bottom, that's the system level components that we want to validate first. So when we look at this, we want to validate bottom up, right? Because if something is wrong in the system, obviously the application is going to be impacted by that. So as an example in the bottom right, if you're discarding packets or if you have a high queue length, it's going to be problematic for audio and video. So we need to make sure that's in place. Also, I'll give another example of CPU. So CPU, it's very misleading to look at a total. So if you have an 8-core or 16-core or 32-core machine, you're looking at an average across all of the CPUs. What we've seen, and we've seen this quite a bit, is that it just takes one core to be impacted for us to impact a conference or a call. So what we look for in the KHIs, we have to look at every individual core, not just a total, to verify that we don't have what we call a hot core. Okay? And then the remediation flow, this is taken from the KHI poster. We'll capture the data, the KHI data, using a PowerShell script, and then we want to confirm the server, the system level components are meeting our thresholds, the tolerances that we've defined. And if not, we need to remediate that first before we can go to the yellow counters or the specific role counters. Once we've asserted health in the system, then we look at the yellow counters, verify that we are within an expected tolerance level there, and then and only then can we move to this next step. Okay, so like I said, it's just a high-level view to show how we would assert health at the... Yes, go ahead. Well, it's applicable to hypervisor because if you are not dedicating cores, for example, and trying to share cores, you will see individual cores spin up. So you're absolutely right that it's even more critical in a virtual environment.
We don't have a view into the hypervisor, right?
Yeah.
We have to rely on the VM that we get that has the performance characteristics we expect from a physical machine.
Okay, so at this point, we have asserted health in the server infrastructure, and it's only at this point that we can move forward. So once we've asserted health, we can then go to the next example, which is the server plant one. And this is where we look at the networking components. How does the network look in between servers? All right, so this first example is an example of the process that we will use to determine how much packet loss is being experienced in the environment. And this is for an individual stream. So if you look at, on the right side, the max packet loss, we look at 5% max. The thing to keep in mind here is you need to understand the duration of that loss. So if it's a very short time frame with a high loss, that's going to be very different than high loss experienced over a larger period of time. So generally, we will start with the average, because that's really more indicative of the overall quality in the call. So this is just showing us an activity diagram of how we would assert health at 2%. We want to make sure that the average loss is less than 2%. So if it is less than 2%, we've achieved health in this area. If not, we would then need to achieve health, so we go to this next stage where we need to troubleshoot the packet loss. Okay, so this is just showing us the first thing that we need to do to troubleshoot packet loss. And what we're going to do is we're going to take simultaneous network captures in between two endpoints. And it doesn't matter where you start, but you have to start somewhere. So usually take the highest loss in the environment, get simultaneous captures when you're making a call, and then you can come back and analyze to determine where this loss is occurring.
By the way, every network team probably has tools or approaches to do this. And I imagine you guys know, or you guys know people on your network team that does this. So Kent's showing you how we do it in Netmon. The same approach can be used with other tools or other, like Wireshark or whatever other mechanisms they have.
Yep, that's a good point. Okay, and the next three slides, there's a lot of information on these slides, but I just want to point out a couple of items on each one. So RTCP is the real-time control protocol, and this is at the network layer. RTCP is basically an out-of-band mechanism that shows us information about the quality of the RTP streams. Okay, so we have sender reports and receiver reports that show both directions of the call quality. All right, and I'll show you in just a minute in the demo. There's also timestamp information that we would use to determine jitter, as well as sender packet counts for us to understand how many packets has the remote endpoint sent to us versus how many we've received. Okay? And then the next piece of this is a report block that shows us the fraction lost at every point during the call, or the cumulative number of packets that are lost during that time since the beginning of the call. Okay, so the next step here is we've determined, we need to determine if there's loss. So the first thing we'll do is in this packet capture, we'll filter for packet loss greater than zero. And I'll give you an example of this in just a minute. But this basically will tell us, are you experiencing a loss on the network? Or potentially, is it reporting loss that's not really loss on the network, but for some other reason? All right, so what we need to do, determine if there's packet loss, yes or no. Then we get to this stage where we need to determine causality of the loss. Is it network loss, meaning did they send us a particular sequence that we did not receive? Or did all of the sequences get received by the remote endpoint, and then there's some other problem? Right, so I'll show this in the demo, but we're basically looking at sequence numbers to make sure that they are sequential and there's no missing sequences. That would determine if there's network loss. Then the next step is, if there's network loss, we can go to the network team and approach that. But there may be cases where we report loss, but it's actually not network loss. So that's this example here where we need to determine what that loss is and why did it occur. So the way we do that is to determine where we lost packets in the network stream, and then work backwards to try to identify why that loss occurred. Okay, so we're just determining, did we lose packets, yes or no? And so I'll show you in Netmon here.
While Kent's getting his Netmon up, just to put this a slightly different way. So when you're on a call, the individual audio is put in an RTP packet, right? And we send those in a constant real-time stream. We sample it, you know, some very low rate, some 10 millisecond, 20 millisecond rate. RTCP is the control protocol for that stream. So it sends these send reports, these receive reports of loss, and that's what Kent's pulling apart in this trace. So the audio is off and going. Here's how we see, do we lose some of those media packets? How many, when were they? That's the side of it.
Yeah, so what we have in this trace, if everybody can see it, is we have a media stream, and I've already filtered out a media stream coming from a gateway going to a mediation server. And I think it's important to point out that all of the logic that we use in this troubleshooting is applicable to all packet loss troubleshooting. So it's applicable to AVMCU to mediation server, as well as mediation server to gateway, as well as client to server. Okay? So in this trace, the source is the .15 address, and the destination, I'm sorry, the source, yeah, that's right. Source is the .15, destination is, .5, destination is .15. That's the direction that we're receiving the RTP stream. And then you will notice that the RTCP stream is going back in the other direction, letting the other endpoint know where this loss, or potentially if there's any loss occurring.
Do you want to zoom in?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if you can. Yeah, you guys. I'm sure you guys can all read that. I just can't from here on the screen.
Yeah, sorry. All right, so I'll take a look at this RTCP frame here, and I'll go down here to this sender report, and then I'll just walk down here and open up this report block. And you can see here that what I mentioned earlier, you've got fraction lost, packets lost, and you can also see inter-arrival jitter here. But at this point, we haven't had any loss. So what I'll do, I'm going to add this to a display filter. And let me just modify this. Okay, so what I'm going to do here is look for, I'm just going to filter out packet loss greater than zero. Okay? I'm going to apply that filter. And what we see here is that the first frame that we experience packet loss is frame 305. And if we look down here, we see that there were 6 packets lost during this RTCP report block. All right, so let's go back up here. Let me take this filter out. And if we look at this frame 305, we will just work backwards in the trace to determine where this loss occurred and what did it look like. So let me show you one more thing here. This highest sequence tells us the highest number of sequence that we received on the wire. And if we look, 1326, that was the last one. So we just walk backwards here. I'll just walk back up. And what we're doing is just making sure these sequence numbers are sequential. So we'll work backwards. Okay, so we've now seen something that's interesting here. The first thing that you notice is this mark. This has a special significance in RTCP, and basically what this is it's called a marker bit. And the marker bit is telling us that this is the first audio that we're receiving after a loss period. Okay, so it's marking in the trace where the first packet is received after a period of silence. So if we look at this frame, it shows a reserve type, and I'll show you in just a minute what this is. But essentially, this is comfort noise, where the system is basically it's an optimization to reduce network bandwidth while somebody's not talking. So we call it comfort noise, but it's also referred to as voice activity detection, or VAD, or SS, silent suppression, depending upon the vendor. All right, so we have one packet here, and I'll just keep looking to see if we can see any other packets. So that's the first one. That's the second, third, fourth, fifth. There's our sixth packet, and let's see if there's any other loss here. No. So there were 6 packets lost, and that's exactly what got reported. So let's go look at this now. So if I look at this RTCP payload type reserved, I'm going to go down here, and I'm going to try to understand what this is. So I'll add this to the display filter. And it's a payload type of 13 hex. So 13 hex is 19 decibel. And if you look up 19 decibel in the RTP documentation, it's an IETF draft of comfort noise that preceded 3389, which is where we transmit comfort noise over 13 decibel. So the symptom here is that we're receiving an invalid packet, essentially with the wrong payload type. So we're marking that as loss, even though technically we didn't lose any packets on the wire. Link, this is a problem for Link. It's not an innocuous issue, because Link will try to compensate for this loss by changing the jitter buffer or by trying to maybe renegotiate a codec downward because it's thinking there's a problem on this network.
Or sending additional forward error correction.
Packets. Yeah, and forward error correction you'll see turned on as well.
So this is really, really interesting, right? So we're reporting loss. But if you go to your network guys, they're not going to see loss. And what's effectively happening is there's a gateway somewhere that's sending us packets that are marked incorrectly as having a payload of silent suppression, right, or comfort noise. And we're looking at it, in the protocol's coded incorrectly, so we're looking at it as loss. And of course, Link will misbehave because of that by changing codecs or adding forward error correction packets because it thinks it's on a lossy network, when really it's a misconfiguration between the gateway and the mediation server.
Yeah. Okay, so any questions on that? Exactly. And that's the example, that's a perfect way to describe it. It's not something we can go to the network team and say, hey, there's loss here, because there's not. It's an issue with the protocol. So in this case, it's either misconfiguration of comfort noise upstream, or in this case, it's just invalid, right? It's an old RFC, so it needs to be updated. Example of this would be H323, needs to be updated to SIP. That would cause this symptom.
You know, we have to assume that the packets coming to us from the gateway are coded correctly.
Yeah. Okay, so what we've done here is validated the server health, and then we've also looked at the network layer to understand, you know, what is the cause of the loss. So the mediation to IP or AVMCU to mediation server, you're going to approach that exactly the same.
Sweet. Okay. So we have 14 minutes left. Thank you, Kent. We're going to dig into this CQM scorecard. Let's see. I think there's one slide left. So last slide, and then we'll flip to look at the scorecard. Just to review some of the ideas behind this thing. So somebody mentioned the managed versus unmanaged. That's that middle pillar. Really important thing for you to keep in mind. I worked with one customer, and over half of their calls were originating from outside their network. And they didn't know it until we did the CQM analysis. And of course, those users are expecting the same quality of calls as if they're internal. So you gotta look at managed versus unmanaged. It's the structured aspect of it is we wanna look at every single component from the headset all the way to the far end of that gateway if it's a link to PSTN call and every element between so we're not missing anything. And then finally, not to beat a dead horse, but this is really an operational process. This isn't a one-time event. In our internal IT org, and I've seen customers do this in different ways, but the way we did it is every morning we gen an email, and I'll show you in this scorecard the type of things that we surface for the top five problems in each of the 10 areas. And that email gets sent every day and is triaged by an ops team, and they figure out if they need to disperse. That's not the right word. Right term. Get folks in our remote sites to look at if it's a bad gateway or if it's a problem on the network. Dispatch. That's where I was looking at. Okay, so let's switch and look at this guy. So we call it the call quality methodology scorecard, and I have to recognize Jens Trier Rasmussen. He's a guy on my team, and we kind of dreamed this up at the Link conference as we were trying to talk through this, and he's really spent the time between then building out the VB script in this Excel spreadsheet to pull all the data back and do this analysis. So this thing is really deep and really rich. So you can see that every single one of the queries that we ship in the network guide, the data for all of these are in here. And we're rendering some of the simplified views, but the idea is that as you dig in, you can do the detailed troubleshooting. So for example, if I just look at device, you'll see this example is anonymized from a customer in China that was the worst I'd ever seen. I just thought it would be a good example. But you'll see this is, when you look at some of the devices, some of the question marks are there because of the localization. But basically, I think this was a period of March through April. It was like a month's worth of data. But you can see every single device that was used, the MOS score of that device, and how many times it was used in a call. So all the detailed data behind here to troubleshoot where the problem spots are is in here. So if I go back to the start, effectively you run the PowerShell script, point it at your QoE instance, give it some date parameters, it'll crunch and it'll put all these query results in a set of comma separated value files into whatever directory you choose. You then open up the tool and you point it to that directory. Let's see. So you import the data, We added this remove off workday results because we're seeing on the weekends, when you have very low levels of calls, you can totally skew the results. So if I'm having thousands and thousands of calls during the week, and then I have 50 calls on Saturday, but five of those calls are poor, well, all of a sudden it looks like I've got a problem when I really don't. So we added the capability to remove off workdays. We generate a whole bunch of charts and analysis, these stream distribution charts. And then this this last bit here is we generate a top 10 list for every single one of the areas in the spreadsheet, so you can go back and you can look. The little values here by default should suit you fine, but there are some localization concerns. Sometimes the format for dates can be different in different countries, so that's why we have the first two items. The days of the week, if for some reason there's different off work days, you can change those. The stream cutoff's important. We default to 100. This is trivial or meaningless if you have a really big deployment. If you have a smaller deployment, it could be as many as you get on a particular subnet. So you want to customize that to make sure you get the right results. So the first thing I typically do after we get this from a customer is I look at this guy. So this guy shows me in the table every, remember that first picture I showed that showed all the yellow lines? This is every single stream that involved media for the time duration in your environment. And we're exhaustive on this. We even have some categories that may not be interesting to you, like other and other wireless, just to make sure that we're showing the complete total. So you can see a distribution. So for example, here, and if I decide what's really interesting for me to look at, let's untick the other, and let's untick VPN, because they've got very little VPN. Then I can get a little better view. So what's causing this customer the most pain? It's kind of hard to say. The green are the good streams, the red are the poor streams. External always is going to have a high percentage of poor, right? And that's unmanaged. I can't do much about it. Wireless sure looks bad. Wired, not so bad, but a fair amount. But mediation to gateway, right? That's the one that pops to me. And that's a server-to-server component. That's probably the first place you want to look. This pie chart blows it up in a little bit of a different way. So this is just looking at the poor stream contributors. So if I, whoops. Oh, crud. Let's try that again. If I, again, focus what I'm looking at, let's see, let's take off wireless. Let's take off external. Let's take off VPN. What are the biggest areas of problem? Mediation, gateway, and wired. Those are definitely the areas I probably want to start with. And then once I get those under control, I can start looking at some of the other areas. One question we get asked a lot is, how do I categorize those buckets? And how do I determine which streams go in which bucket? And what's other, by the way? And why is other on there? And why is it so big? So every time I call into a conference and it says, welcome to the conferencing service, put in your PIN, or I have that conferencing attendant that says you're muted. All those are system streams. And we count those just to be complete. But typically, those aren't very interesting to you. There's not much you can do about making them better. So what we've added is this table here that actually shows you every one of these queries, what it is we're actually looking at. Are we looking internal? Are we looking wired? Are we looking wireless? And a lot of what we key off of is the user agent type of the call. So for example, if you look at this tab, you can see other is response groups, call park service, exchange auto attendant, the conferencing announcement service, the conference auto attendant. All those system related services land in that other bucket. So this tab here will tell you exactly what each query does. So that stream distribution, really interesting. I almost feel like I'm on CSI or something every time I get one of these from a customer, because every customer's looks different. Every customer's got problems in their problem space is different, or their use of the product's different. So that's the first thing that's interesting to look at. The next thing that's interesting is these trending charts. So when I first looked at these, I said, wow, what happened? Here we can zoom in a little bit. What is it, like April 7th or something like that? Right? All of a sudden, I get this complete drop-off. By the way, the blue is the total number of streams in the environment. So you can see these guys peak out at about 4,000 streams a day. And the red is the ratio of those streams. So for example, their peak is like 9% on the far right here that are poor. So So in this case, they're getting almost 10% poor streams. And this is AV to mediation. So again, these are servers that should be in a managed data center that should not have this high of a poor stream. But I saw this dip, and you can actually see it in all the trends. So I had to actually look up holidays in China, and there is some major holiday that hits at the beginning of April. So that's why you see that big dip in usage. If you don't take the weekend data out, you'll see the sawtooth pattern, which kind of confused the results as well. But the trend that pops out to me here is, again, this mediation to gateway one. Right? They're obviously increasing volumes, so people are probably starting to use Link more and more. But as they increase, the number of poor streams are correspondingly going up. So this is a problem area that they definitely want to pay attention to. So finally, we get to the scorecard. So this guy is exactly the same 10 things that we talked about at the beginning. It's the exact same 10 things that are in that poster. Server health, as Kent went through, is the exercise going through the KHIs, making sure your servers are healthy. The server-to-server streams, the one we looked at before, that was this mediation to gateway one, right? And again, here you can see in these little spark lines that drop in April. Gateway to PSTN, we don't know what's going on there. We need to figure out how to look at that leg separately. Wired and wireless, that's last mile. How is the user connected to the corporate network? And then we have these device ones. So this is, you can see they've got a really poor distribution of MOS scores here. We're using 3.6 as kind of the point where we expect people to be. And only 2% of streams are MOS score at 3.6 or higher. System, that's where they're having really high glitch rates on system. Fortunately, very little VPN. No problems with TCP versus UDP, or internal relays, not that bad either. This last one is the number of streams that are external, so that's kind of in that unmanaged bucket. So I reported out separately, but you can see problems there too. So for each of these, we have a target. We compute a score, red, yellow, green. We show you a visual for how the data actually looks. You can figure out if there's a trend problem. And then we actually show you the criteria that we're using to color it red, yellow, green. And then we show you the results that we came back with. So you can make a determination for yourself if there's some issue with the way the data is coming back. And then we give you a set of actions in this last column. So what do you do about it? And most of it is going to that top issues list and looking at server pairs or looking at devices individually. One thing, though, is if these you don't think are the right targets for you, you can change them. So for example, if I can't buy devices for everybody and I have a very low expectation of quality, I can change that MOS score. And then I can update the scorecard. And I can do this to any of these values. So then they turn green. Curious if we just go up a teeny bit if they stay green. No. So what do I do then in these areas to try and turn these green? The very first thing I need to do, by the way, is check with my users. Every company's users has a different set of expectations for what a link call should be like. I'm assuming if you're doing this, your user are complaining that you have a call quality problem. Before you start digging in and bugging your network guys, you need to circle back with your users to make sure that the users are reporting issues. You always want to correlate with that. That's your base, right? But assuming that they do, if I go now to the top issues, you can see, again, they're sorted just in the same order. So this is wired. So I can see the subnets where I'm having problems. These are wired. These are wireless. By the way, if I pop back over here and I change this up, let's look at a higher level of streams, and let's update this guy. So now I have a much smaller number of reports, but still with my wireless, I've got this one wireless subnet, for example, this 192.168.1.0, that's almost half of the streams are poor. So there's like one immediately I'd want to look at. AVMCU to mediation server, I'm telling you the pairs. I'm telling you the mediation server name. I'm telling you the AVMCU name so you can see where the problems are there. And you can see in some of these I've got almost 20% poor streams. Gateway was the problem spot that we saw, you know, just at the start without even looking at the drill down. And here you can see the mediation servers in this link 3 pool seem to have a problem talking to this .58 gateway, right, with about 20%. So there's an area to look at. Devices. So these guys, I looked this up. I'll zoom into this because I've never heard of this Connexant. It's the onboard audio driver for Lenovo laptops and probably a bunch of other. So basically, these guys are all using the onboard mic and speakers, which in some cases is okay. But obviously, in these guys' case, they're having really poor results and really low MOS scores. And you can see, they have 12. You know, if I add these up, some of these are dupes. If I add these up, there's thousands and thousands of users using these onboard devices, and they need to get a USB device or an analog device or something that's going to suit them better. So I could spend all day in this thing. I love it. You can go into each detail tab. You can run it as often as you want. You can set a baseline. You can change your targets. You can make some work, do some work like Ken showed you. You can rerun it, see if you're making progress. And that's the idea, that you just iterate on this thing as you go. So it's flashing red. We're out of time. I apologize we went to the very end. We'll absolutely stick around for questions. Thank you guys for coming. Thank you guys for sticking around to the end of us. And enjoy the party.